Welcome, everybody. It's the thing we do every single week here on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's time to get in the cage. It's brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. A pleasure to bring to the program a man I'm sure all of you read on ESPN.com. Does a great job covering the sport of MMA. He is the one, the only, Brett Okamoto, with us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Brett, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's good to catch up with you. There are a few things I want to hit with you here. And I don't know, did you see these most recent comments from Ronda Rousey? Where she was talking about, why she doesn't talk, or radio silence, if you will. And she said, you know, famous people keep more and more to themselves. Why should I talk? I believe hearing me speak is a privilege, and it's a privilege that's been abused. So why not revoke it from mm-hmm. everyone? Wait, is that her playing the WWE role, or is that a comment from somebody who feels like that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say?
I think she's probably thinking that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say. I don't want to put words into her mouth, and I don't want to try to interpret things that aren't there, but I'll give you my speculation on this.
Okay.
Just knowing Ronda as I do, and I don't know her like she's my best friend or anything, but covering her career and you know, having an opportunity to talk to her on a lot of different occasions, I just think that when she lost, you know, well, even before she lost, I mean, to be a public figure, to go from, you know, someone who's not famous to all of a sudden super famous in a very short amount of time like she did, I think that there's a lot of pressures and a lot of, quite frankly, negative things that go along with that. And she, I don't think she had the thickest skin to put up with some of those negative aspects of becoming famous, you know, in a way overnight. And I think that her way of handling that was to cut everybody off. And I think the way that she's looking at it is, hey, I knew that when I gave an interview, that everybody who was getting that interview profited from it. You know, it was clicks for them. It was good for their careers. It was good for their profession. Anybody I gave my time to, and she feels like, I guess, a little bit used. That's the sense that I've gotten from Ronda. I don't know if it's the correct one or not, but if you're trying to make sense of the words that she's saying, that's my interpretation of it.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not one of those Ronda bashers that jumped up soon as she lost and said, oh, she's overhyped, she deserved it. I'm a huge fan of her. I loved watching her fight. I thought she was great for the sport. So this isn't coming from a troll or somebody who always had it out for her. But when I read that, I went, you got to be kidding me. It's a privilege to hear me speak. Like, how do you say that with a straight face? That just tells me you're functioning in a different hemisphere than the most reasonable, rational people. It was just a really odd comment that I don't think reads very well. I don't think it's going to help alleviate the negativity that she's talking about.
I would agree with you. I don't think it reads well at all. But, you know, I'm just giving you my honest take. When I see that, I interpret it as, and I think what she means, is that she is aware that, you know, anybody who took a photo of me or a selfie of me or anything, they had a motive to you know, show it to people or to write a headline or to create an article. So it is a privilege to speak to me because it's going to get out there and it's going to help your career, and not everybody deserves that. And what you think of that is up to your own opinion on whether she's right or not.
Yeah, just weird. All right. Let's move on. And I know it's been a little bit since this happened, but we haven't had a chance to speak. I wanted to get your take on what we saw with Conor McGregor, another guy who I'm a huge fan of. I've had the chance to interview him in person and on the phone, as I know you have many times. And I find him to be a very smart, thoughtful guy when he's not in character, if you will. I think he really gets into playing this character, and it's been very profitable. I think he's also a guy that clearly the fame and fortune has gotten him to a place in his mind where he thinks, I'm just sort of above everything and can act and do whatever I would like. What was your takeaway from the whole bus incident?
You know, obviously it was disgusting in a lot of ways. It affected guys who were trying to compete on the card the next day, prevented them from, you know, taking advantage of the camp that they had done, the sacrifices. I mean, you got to remember that these guys, they spend weeks away from their families. It's not easy going through a fight and then, you know, you do it all because you want to perform on a Saturday night, and Conor took that away from those guys. I mean, when I look at Conor McGregor, I hope that the guy that we all knew, that we came to know very well in 2016 and is a competitive spirit and loves fighting and still has a whole lot of things to accomplish in the sport, I just hope he's still there. You know, and quite frankly, we don't know the answer to that. I mean, had this Dolly been thrown slightly different the window. You know, maybe it's hitting Rosenheim Yunus in the face. Maybe it's crashing head on into Michael Chiesa instead of just knocking out the window. I mean, this could have been a lot worse than what it ended up being. And if Conor McGregor keeps getting away with all of this stuff and still getting booked into these multi-million-dollar fights, he's probably not going to stop. I mean, if there's one thing we know about McGregor, he always raises the bar, and he's continuing to do that really in every aspect of his life. And now we're at a point where that bar is right on the cliff of, you know, doing something that he can't take back and that he can't recover from. So I hope that at the end of the day, maybe this can even be a positive for McGregor, that it will, you know, it will show him that he was really close to some very, very real ramifications on this. And you know, it'll help him out in a positive way.
Well, and he's got a court date in June, I believe. So we'll see what happens from there. But is it your expectation, barring some sort of, I don't know, jail time, which I don't see happening, but is it your expectation we see him back in the cage this year?
Yeah, as of right now, I would say yes. And of course, we do have to find out what happens in June. And I'm not a legal expert, but, you know, talking to the people who tend to know these things, and this is in their wheelhouse, they don't anticipate jail time. You know, it's a first offense. And even though there were injuries, they were, you know, classified as minors. So I think Conor's going to get, you know, he's going to get sued by a whole lot of people, but I don't know if he's going to spend much time in a jail cell.
So he's going to potentially need to fight. I know he's got a lot of money, but who knows what kind of awards will be handed out to those suing him. Hey, you wrote a piece on a guy that I'm fascinated with, and that's Nick Newell. And I don't know how many people are familiar with him, but he's an MMA fighter who's got one loss on his record, and he's also a guy that doesn't have part of his left arm. He doesn't have a hand there, and he's been extremely effective. And he retired for a bit, and I don't know how many people knew that, but he said goodbye to the game, and then he came back, and then he's been openly lobbying for an opportunity with the UFC, and he's getting one in a sense. He's gonna be part of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series starting in June. I mean, when you watch him fight, do you look at a guy saying, all right, you know, what he's doing is great, but he's not going to be able to do it against the elite? Or do you look at a guy saying, yeah, there's no reason he shouldn't have a chance in the UFC because what he's doing, he's capable of doing against anybody?
Yeah, I think both. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say that. I think he deserves a shot. I mean, he's got a great record of 14-1. He's got a background in collegiate wrestling. I believe he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He runs his own school. We know the guy is a competitor, and he's got 9 submission finishes in his 14 out of his 14 wins. He is a quality mixed martial artist. At the same time, to say that I think he probably would struggle against, you know, the top 5, top 10 of this division, it is my opinion, yes, he probably would. But I mean, that's the lightweight division is so stacked that there are a lot of guys who have struggled with the top 10 of that division. I think Nick has proven himself that he belongs in a situation like this, and he deserves an opportunity to fly to Las Vegas and fight in the Ultimate Fighter gym with Dana White and the two matchmakers sitting cageside. And if he rises to that occasion and he wins a fight, then, you know, I think he's definitely deserved a right to fight in the actual UFC and get a UFC contract. So I'm not sure exactly where his career will go. I mean, he's 32, so he's not, a young guy in his 20s. That said, you know, he's not old by any means either. I think he's got a few good years left, and I'm happy to see he's getting this opportunity. I do think he deserves it.
One other thing you wrote about I wanted to get to, and again, we're speaking with Brett Okamoto of ESPN.com here. You can check out his stuff at ESPN.com. Does a great job. You're writing about the upcoming Bellator heavyweight fight between Frank Mir and Fedor Emelianenko. It's the main event of Bellator 198. Are you interested in these fights? I mean, is it? I'm trying to figure out my level of interest. Is it more car crash, or is it more, I think this is going to be a really good competitive fight? Because, I mean, Bellator is putting some older fighters who are clearly past their prime and matching them up against each other. And I'm wondering where the level of intrigue is for you.
For me personally, usually it's not that high. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, Bellator has a knack for putting on these fights, and for the most part, I'm not super bought into them. I mean, I watch so many fights, and I'm at so many of these events that the sport is at its peak, and these guys are in their primes. That's what draws my interest, of course. But I will tell you, this particular one this weekend, I'm intrigued by it, and I think a lot of that is Frank Mir, and maybe it's just, you know, I've lived in Vegas for the last 10 years, and Frank is a Vegas guy. I've got some bias in there that I just can't help. But I do think it's interesting when you got a guy like Frank Mir who fought in the UFC for basically his entire career, and then, you know, failed a drug test, ended up, you know, getting a release from the UFC and now going over to Bellator. I don't think this is something that he necessarily, I don't think this is the turn in his career that he necessarily anticipated, but in a way it's working out for him. He gets a fight against Fedor Emelianenko that has eluded him throughout his career. He gets an opportunity to be in something that's kind of exciting in this heavyweight tournament. If he runs the table, he could become a champion in the second organization. So I think the storylines here are good. In terms of the fight itself, you know, I'm not anticipating the highest form of mixed martial arts in this fight. I'm just not. But it's a heavyweight fight between two legends who know what they do well. And there's some good storylines to follow. So I am actually I am actually pretty interested in watching this fight on Saturday.
Well, one of the things you touched on in this, and that's another headline on the webpage, ESPN.com, is Fedor Emelianenko, the best ever. And this is something I've struggled with because I didn't see him in his prime. I wasn't watching him in Pride days when he was dominating and, you know, getting slammed on his head and recovering, you know, against Kevin Randleman and these things. I've seen this version of him in Strikeforce, and I was at his Affliction fight with you know, seeing a diminished version. To me, he fights like a bar brawler. He goes out there just winging, looping punches, and he's going to hit you or he's going to get hit and get knocked out these days. And it feels like the game maybe has passed him by in terms of the skill set that some of these guys he's facing have. I don't consider him the best ever, but I'm wondering what answer did you come up with, and how do you sort of, you know, how do you justify it, if you will, if you do think he's the best ever?
Yeah, I don't think he's the best ever either, but I can understand why people do. And that is, when Fedor was in his prime and he just could not lose. He had some fights where, you know, it looked like it was not going his way, and he found ways to win those fights. You know, in the heavyweight division, is quite frankly, you know, as we see now, obviously, an undersized guy for the heavyweight division as well. I mean, to win all of those fights in the manner in which he did it, there was something just really special about Fedor in his prime. It's almost hard to put into words, but anybody who was there and was following the sport during that, there's nothing else like it. You know, just like there's nothing else like Anderson Silva. When he was in his absolute prime, there was just something different and uniquely special about that guy, and the same can be said for Fedor. So if that had you know, gotten its way into your heart and you can't let it go and you say, this was the best, greatest guy I ever saw, then I can't argue with you on that. But I think in my mind, when I compare what Fedor did, as great as it was, you know, the names in that conversation of who the greatest of all time is Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, John Jones, Demetrius Johnson, and then Fedor. And I don't know if I can rank Fedor above any of those. I think what those other guys have accomplished and the way in which they've done it and the skill set that they had, it does trump what Fedor has shown me over the course of his career.
Hey, last one before we let you go, Brett. I want to get your thoughts on The Ultimate Fighter. I keep reading about how the ratings for the debut episode were terrible, and it's been a part of a trend from last season to the season before. And people are predicting this is going to be the end of that show, which I would hate to see because I think it's such a great breeding ground for future fighters. We've seen so many champions and so many top-level fighters come out of this show. But maybe it is finding its end. Maybe it is it can't find a new way to appeal to fans. What do you think the future holds for The Ultimate Fighter?
I think it's a fine show, in terms of, you know, the talent that they're able to find in it, and clearly, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of the talent that does come out of it and ends up signing with the UFC, they do very well. I mean, that show has a proven track record of finding talent, so I think you have to say that first and foremost. But I will say, as a viewer standpoint of it, it has gotten very stale. And I think that the problem with it is, and this is my personal opinion, is it's the same thing every time. I mean, it's literally just the same. You know what's going to happen in an episode. It's going to show a little bit of the house. It's going to show this guy is fighting this guy, you know, and then it'll document them just a little bit in their camps and preparations for one another. And then you get a fight at the end, and sometimes the fight is good and sometimes it's not that great. And maybe you get a little bit of coach drama mixed in between it. It is stale. I mean, you can't just run the same format out there year in and year out. And one thing I don't like about the show is that it takes up the time of the coaches. You know, I mean, sometimes you put fights on hold just so that two guys can go in and coach the Ultimate Fighter. I think the Ultimate Fighter has been a tremendous asset for the UFC. Obviously, it has been a great piece of content for them. But if the show were to go away, just me personally, I think that they could replace it with some fresh things, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Do they need the villains that we all sort of railed against for the Junie Brownings of the world and things like that? Do they need the coach conflict like you've seen in the past that have been very heated? Because that's a little absent these days. Is that what's missing? Or do you think even if you've got those elements, it's still a show that ultimately has reached its conclusion?
Yes. I mean, honestly, yes. And I it's weird coming from me because I think you and I have spoke, you know, enough times in the past that, you know, I'm kind of a purist. I mean, I appreciate the art and the competition of this far more than the, you know, the trash talking and the sort of circus element of it. But one thing that I've said about The Ultimate Fighter is you have to give my wife a reason to watch. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people love reality TV. And you have to give those people a reason to watch if maybe they're not the hardcore fight fans. And I think right now, in a weird way, The Ultimate Fighter has turned into a show only for really hardcore fans that are interested in guys, you know, in the gym training and you know, talking about fighting one another. And then you get a 15-minute fight at the end of it. Like, that's who this show appeals to. I think it would be better off by allowing these guys to stretch their legs a little bit, you know, letting them out of the house and getting some of their personality more involved, as opposed to just this formulaic, let's lock all these guys in the house and really just focus on it from a pure MMA standpoint.
He is Brett Okamoto of ESPN.com, doing a great job, as I said, covering the sport. You should read his stuff again, ESPN.com. Brett, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for taking time, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Anytime. Yep. Talk to you soon.